things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. There's so much that is happening now that we're going to talk about, and then so much of the history we have is because.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us today. It is rainy here in Youngstown, which is par for the course. We've had a really beautiful fall. And so to get some rain and cold and all of that feels kind of nice and seasonal and normal. I know if you're watching from one of the coasts or Florida or California or something, you're thinking you guys are sick. I like the rain. I was built for 55 and rainy. I like this. It's nice.
But it's a little dreary, you know?
It is. I don't know. I go into like productive mode. I get more stuff done when it rains. I don't know. I just put my head down, like, can't go outside and do this. So let's get some work done.
All right, cool.
But interesting stuff happening in the world today. We're going to deviate a little bit from Think and Grow Rich. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the value and the importance of the whole idea of freedom of speech, expression. It's the First Amendment for a reason. I think in the culture today, we see cancel culture. We see a lot of this stuff, but it was really blaring in the news as the Twitter CEO and Facebook CEOs had to testify on Capitol Hill in regards to why they were throttling down certain organizations and causing certain posts to be fact-checked and banned, and at what way are they doing that, and why are they doing that, and is it in conjunction with our value of free speech? And so that's where I want to kind of go today, because I think that's an important thing. I think it's inherently valuable in our culture and in our society. And the moment that's taken away, it limits creativity. It limits what people can do. It puts all the brakes on all the stuff that we're trying to push forward in people's lives. And so people should be able to explore, and it's the right for people to say really dumb and stupid things and crude things and things that I quite frankly don't agree with and wouldn't say so myself. And so when you think of that First Amendment, that free speech, what's happening with Twitter and Facebook, and maybe you see them as separate issues, and that might be the route that we'll go. But let's talk about the whole concept of free speech. Where do you see that fitting in? How does it fit into your life, into business? Do you care? Do you not care? Is it important to you? Not important to you? You're going to say whatever you want, regardless of whether there's a First Amendment. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, you know, those things are important to our culture, and there's a huge responsibility, a huge price to pay in order to have it. So we normally think of free speech is that I can say, I'm going to say great things and I'm going to have the right to say them. What mm-hmm. about people who don't have great things to say? They have an equal right to say Absolutely. Those same things. And so the responsibility is, it's not that you have a right to say things, is you got to be able to hear things that you don't want to hear mm-hmm. and you got to be able to stomach it. So that's the part of the responsibility that's harder for people to stomach. When somebody says something right. racist or somebody says something misogynist and, you know, legit, they, and you have to be able to fight for their right to say it, even if you don't agree with them.
Absolutely. And I would in this context, I think the market handles a lot of that stuff. If I'm being honest, like, if somebody is like being openly awful and racist and just a terrible person, like, people are like, I'm probably not going to buy your products. Like, I'm probably not going to go do business there. I'm probably going to, they're not going to have as many relationships, or they're going to attract those type of people that are also not nice and racist or whatever. And to police that is where I think everybody is concerned. Like, it's not, there's not some moral value of saying these people are good and these people are bad and these people deserve to be heard and these people don't. It's everybody deserves to be heard. I just, after I hear you, I can decide whether or not I want to continue that relationship or whether or not I want to continue in that. And I think people are smart enough that that stuff kind of takes care of itself. No?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that if everyone was as passionate about that right and everybody could stand up for something they don't necessarily agree with, then, you know, we can teach the people who, you know, because honestly, if something offends me, I want you to go shut them up, right? Mm. Instead of me taking responsibility for it and then using my free speech to back at you and sharing with how disgusted I am with what you were saying. Because you can keep back and forth in free speech. It doesn't mean I have to, you know, at one point shut up and just let you talk, because that's not the freedom.
Interesting. I think where people wrestle around this, people don't mind it being you know, silly, people don't mind it, and movies, people don't mind it. In a lot of different spheres. And for a long time, people didn't mind it in general. But you had this, I don't know, growing up, it was kind of like, don't talk about politics and religion at Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever, because you don't want to be divisive. You don't want to be the problem.
I didn't get that memo.
No, you didn't get that memo. My dad did not get that memo either. But it was like that underground, you know, don't bring up, don't stir the pot. You know, like if you have those thoughts, keep them to yourselves. Do you think that that is a detriment to free speech?
I mean, you need to practice talking about uncomfortable things, mm-hmm. and I prefer to do it with my family who are like friendlies, you know, yeah. versus somebody I'm going to meet on the street. But honestly, I think the people on the street are more likely to just put up with it and tolerate because mm-hmm. it's not worth the argument for a total stranger, but it's great practice.
Yeah. I think social media has weirded this out a little bit.
For sure.
Because everybody has internet muscles. They get on and I have an opinion, so I have to share this. And I can't tell you how many times I've went to comment on somebody's things and I'm like, I'm just going to delete that. That's not worth the headache. It's not worth the fight. And then there are times where you're just like, forget it. I'm going in.
Right.
and you don't have to have value for the other person. You don't have to, you just go in and you're going to say what you're going to say. And sometimes people are, you know, use logical fallacy. They attack you personally when in actuality, you might be talking about a sports team and why you like them or whatever. And you can argue to that sense to that point. But so many people go and take it from the idea space to the personal space very quickly. Is there a danger in attaching ideas to the person?
Ooh, that's a good one. Cause I don't, you know, you come up with something mm-hmm. and I disagree with you. Like I didn't then take your image, like what I like mm-hmm. about you as a person and ruin it because of something that you would have said. But sure. there are some issues that I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. And if I found out that you, you know, take pit bulls and you beat them in your backyard, we're gonna have problems. Yeah. We are. Yeah. so there are those issues, you know, with me personally.
Yeah. Well, I just think everything has become a personal issue. Like it's one thing to have, but like even, you know, for some of the most serious political issues or even some of the most, I have friends that are not Christians. I happen to be a pastor. I happen to think that, you know, from a theological standpoint, there are some things that I find to be very true and other things to be very false. I don't think that we should silence people I disagree with. I think there's stuff in there that can be good and can be valuable of people that I disagree with. Even amongst lots of other Christians, there's lots of differing opinions theologically on various things. And I don't think any one side should be, you know, blasphemer, tie them up, you know, what else
well,
floats?
You know, witches, and you know? I'm gonna gripe a little bit okay. about this and do a yeah. little complaining. So, you know, I'm an old school marketer. Mm-hmm. All right. So when you're appealing to someone, you're trying to persuade them to do something that you think is either a good idea or is truth right. or whatever. And what social media does, the fear with social media is that a next generation are being conditioned that the way that we engage with one another is not marketing. It's the opposite of marketing. Like their kind of marketing is like, you're a dick. Want to buy my coat? Like that doesn't work. I'm not going to persuade you. If the first thing out of my mouth is to insult you or hit political points that elevates me and minimizes you. And so, you know, old school marketers are like, I got to dine you up a little bit. And I got to build up your, you know, the nice words that are coming out of my mouth. And I get you feeling good so that you'll go along with me kind of a thing.
Yeah. But it's funny that you say that. So there's a really nice gentleman that I have lived in my house, I think, coming up on like a month, not even. And there's a really nice gentleman that works for ADT, the home security company. And he dropped in like 2 days after we moved in. Say, hey, I'm just in the neighborhood. Want to give you my card. We have this special deal where you're here. You know, first 30 days, we'll put up all these access points and cameras and everything else. And, you know, he's going on and on and in his sales pitch and stuff. And it was nice. You know, he's personable. He asked, you know, when we moved in, how things were going. And I was like, well, you know, just kind of was like, we got to think about it. We haven't made our first mortgage payment yet. Just kind of like, thanks, buddy, but no thanks. And he's like, well, I'll check back in, you know, before the 30 days is up because I don't want you to miss out on this deal, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, I promise you, the deal is not what's going to sell me. And he showed up today, an hour ago before I drove here, and he came to the house and saw my political signs out front, and he was very good at exactly what you're talking about. He started making hay because we happened to be on the same side of the aisle when it came to some of the stuff. He goes, "Oh, did you see?" And then we got talking. Next thing I knew, I'm talking to this guy for 20 minutes because I'm happened to enter, and we were not talking about security systems. He was very good. And, you know, we talked about a whole bunch of other stuff, and he said, "Listen, you probably haven't even made your first mortgage payment yet. You know, I'll come back and check in a little bit." And I was like, "You know what? You're my friend." You know, like, I'm like, "Dude, you stop by whenever you want. I enjoyed this conversation." And he did exactly what you're talking about in terms of marketing, and I knew I was being marketed
exactly.
to. But I was like, "This was kind of nice." I didn't like he didn't pull out a product, he didn't pull out his binder, he didn't anything. We just stood on my porch and talked for 20 minutes, and I didn't even realize it had been 20 minutes till my wife was like, "Hey, I got to go." And I was like, "Oh, sorry." He's like, "No, you go." He goes, "I'll stop by another time. You guys keep getting, you know."
So here's that dude in the Twitter sphere. "Hey, you got this house. You're stupid because you don't have a security system. Why don't you get one? Are you too dumb?" Twitter.
And plays the YouTube video of the house being broken into.
"Still stupid? I'm still here."
Exactly. And it's interesting because everything is kind of slash and burn marketing. It's like, how do I do this quickly and make the sale rather than really connect with the other person? But I think that whole social media atmosphere has started to deteriorate the idea of, you know, a free speech and that people can say whatever they want, because the immediate response is, if Joe says something I don't like, well, let's ban him from Twitter. Let's throttle down all of his social media and let's put his company on blast. And nobody should go there. Nobody should do this. And that cancel culture with social media and tandem is a really dangerous spot, especially when the CEOs start picking winners and losers. And that's why they were on Capitol Hill today, because there were certain news articles that came out that favored one side of the political election, and they throttled those articles down under the guise of they were fact-checking them and there was false information in there.
Well, let me give you devil's advocate, because I'm playing your dad.
Yeah, let's
today,
do it.
Okay?
Love it.
So both of those companies can put whatever product they want together. If they want to convert all the "thes" to "blue" and serve it back at you, 100%. Everybody's just mad is because that's where a lot of people congregated, and then they flip the rules on you.
Correct.
Well, I can go to McDonald's and they can change breakfast closes down at 9 o'clock, and people are going to be pissed off until they decide that they're not going to shop there anymore.
Correct.
So it's tough for me to say for sure that they have a responsibility to do something they don't want to do when we're talking about the freedoms to do what you want to do.
That's exactly where I was going with this conversation.
Dang, I ruined it. Sorry.
No, that's good. You're a step ahead of me. And I think that's the tension in this whole thing, is we look at those companies and we say they have a responsibility to be these First Amendment agencies, when in actuality, they're in it for the bottom line and the profit.
Right.
And if they want to make dumb decisions to affect their bottom line and profit, if they want to create an atmosphere where somebody's going to be pissed off enough to go start a better engine and market people over to them, all of that stuff plays into it. And I agree with you. I think the market shifts some of that. I think what's the legal side of it is some of the protections the government have put in place for those type of platforms to be considered not publishers, but rather just websites. So they're not responsible for what people post. They're not responsible for those things. But then you're going to edit what people post and that sort of stuff. Does that make you responsible? Is I think the question they're asking.
Well, I think we're going out wrong. I mean, the whole thing is predicated on information that is not true. If we would just be completely transparent about what it is that we're doing, then you can get away with anything. But if I said that I am completely objective, right? But then I take a very subjective view, then all it is like the scientists come along and say, "Okay, well, I'm going to do the subjective, the objective test. Is he objective? No, you're not an objective deal anymore." Right. And then that's it. Call me a non-objective resource, and then people can make up their own decisions.
Yeah. Well, and you see that happening in the news media. You see that happening, kind of across the board. And news media may be a little bit different in the sense that, news media is a protection of the Constitution, the freedom of the press to do that and to report. And when you start to blur the lines and call yourselves an objective journalist, let's do another one.
I know.
I love it.
So freedom of the press.
You were all worried about today. You're good.
So freedom of the press, does that mean the press then cannot be criticized? Is the press so noble that if they say something, nobody can then use their freedom, that First Amendment, to
no, yeah, obviously they can criticize the press. You can criticize whoever you want. I think where the
so what's it mean? Freedom of the press is what?
That's good, Joe. Freedom of, I would say freedom of the press is the idea that we have the right to factual information. We have the right to unfiltered factual information. And when you get into opinion pieces and the pontificating and all of that stuff where you have this slanted partisan journalism, I hate that I have to watch two different news sites and figure out that the truth is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, you sort of miss the days of, here are the six facts. This happened, this happened, this happened. Police are investigating it.
Period. So freedom of the press is not to print whatever you want about whatever you want, saying whatever you want.
I suppose it is.
It is. It really is. Because it would be then if we made a law that somehow stopped people from saying whatever it is they want. And you can see that that's a slippery slope and that's a dangerous thing. But that's what we're trying to preserve is the press to be able to print whatever they want about anything. If they want to call you a poo-poo head, they can call you a poo-poo head. Sure. And on the other side, you can hate people that call other people poo-poo heads.
Mm.
Slid real quick.
No, that was good. So then let me push this question then. Is it more our misconception of that First Amendment and freedom of the press and that sort of stuff, or our expectation that it is noble and that it is those things? Because I think for a long time the press was kind of presented that way. I know at least in the history books and the way it's presented is like, you know, these noble, you know, fighters, you know, preserving the truth and all things great and noble. And today it's just a slime machine. I mean, hit jobs and hit pieces and everything is, it just feels icky. Like you don't even want to watch it or read it. And, but it has to your point from the first part, it has created these spots for true, authentic, fact-based journalism. There's a bunch of internet sites and YouTube accounts that have come on, and then that's the argument that people are making, is you have these folks that are going against the narrative, the David versus Goliath, if you will, and they're running on these platforms, and these platforms are bought out by so-and-so, and then they're throttling down so that you have to go get your information from the crappy New York Times or wherever.
Well, the business that we're talking about is messy, and it's intended to be. Are the people who wrote this stuff decided that that's what they wanted it to be? They wanted there to be argument. There wanted to be disagreement. Now, the press was a friend of the people because the government was bigger than the people, and the press was the weapon to keep the politicians honest, right? But what happens when the weapon that you use to keep the politicians honest goes dishonest?
Yeah.
Who's then the one that keeps the newspaper in check or the television in check or the radio in check? Well, it's us. We do that. And so they can say whatever they want. They could be not a weapon anymore against the politicians. They could be the same as the politicians, right? But that's why we have the power, not them having the power.
And our power is in purchasing and views and all that stuff.
I can start a newspaper right now that says everybody sucks but me. That's my power. Anybody can do it. There's no there, and that's part of it, that there's nobody that has to license me to be a press. It's free. I can decide to be a press right now. I can see everything that you're doing is wrong, and you're just the same as any politician, and I can go say whatever and people are going to listen to me, and if I'm right, they're going to follow me, and guess what? I'm now the press.
Interesting. You push. So
let me tell you about Bitcoin, because this is a cool little illustration about Bitcoin. So everybody, like, money is like, you know, this sort of like pure thing, right? It's all figured out. It's been scientifically, you know, studied and analyzed. It's a pretty sure thing, right? But it's centralized. Somebody's in control of it. Mm-hmm. So you think, is there ever a day that the person that's in control of money can do bad things? So we'll say the Chinese government decided to say, hey, we got too much debt with the rest of the world. Let me inflate my currency, right? And then now we don't have debt. Now there are going to be people pissed off that offered you to loan you money, and then you inflated your currency so you can owe you less. That's a bad thing, right?
Right.
So Bitcoin did this where they decentralized it and took it away from anybody being able to control. If you don't think the United States has the ability to be bad at certain points, right, then you're mistaken. There's going to be somebody that's going to be in the helm sometime in the future that's going to make a bad choice and take something that you thought was cool and make it not cool anymore. So what Bitcoin did was made it so that nobody had ultimate control. Mm-hmm. You know what ended up happening? You know what happened first off? Drug dealers started using it. right? You had this pure thing that got synonymous with drug dealers. Why? Because if you didn't have regulation, if you didn't have regulation to tell you what you couldn't do, there's nobody to shut down a drug dealer. If he wanted to use the coin, he was free to use it, because now the freedom grows bad things just as easy as it grows good things. And it's up to the people to regulate it, not a controlling or central authority.
So how do the people regulate something like that? Has Bitcoin been regulated, or is it still?
No, drug dealer can just as easily start trading it just like anything else. They have free access to it. It's not controlled by anyone. Yeah. So what ended up happening, and this happened in utilities too, like deregulated utilities, you know, who jumped into it after it's been deregulated? The scummiest companies on the planet were the first ones to jump in deregulated gas and electricity and whatever. And it took a little while till the real players ferreted out and made sure it was a safe place to be. And then legitimate companies got in there. And now you don't hear about the slimy ones anymore, because if I'm going to jump into it, I'm going to deal with the guys I trust, not the guys that are slimy.
Yeah. So then is there ever a time to regulate anything?
Think of an example where regulation is good. I want to say temporarily. I want to say that if you sunset, I mean, all of it's going to be a way of quashing a freedom. Uh-huh. But if you say that I'm solving a specific purpose, trust me, give me a 30-day window to see if I can solve it. If it goes bust, it expires anyway, and it's not something that's taken away from you forever. So if we have a problem, it's almost like a riot, right? You suspend your freedoms with stuff for a period of time till you quell whatever is bad's happening, and then that sunsets and we go back to the way it used to be.
Okay. Is that the case, do you think, with speech? Like, obviously, you can't walk into a crowded movie theater and yell,
"That's it right there."
Bomb is the one that, most people will, the illustration most people will use. There's certain things that disturb the peace. Certain towns have rules that you can't be at certain decibels past a certain hour. Well,
all of that is related to how it affects other people. You go back in the woods where there's nobody and you could say whatever you want. You could scream fire. Right? Yeah, there's nobody around. Yeah. It's all you and you. It's your freedom. Nobody has the freedom to be heard. It's to be able to say.
Okay. So if I can't be heard, though, because I mean, you could hear a politician using that very argument, well, we can put you in prison. You can say whatever you want, or we can, not let you use X, Y, and Z platforms. You're not allowed to, churches in a lot of countries are kept from doing certain things. So in your mind, there's certain things that free speech should be curtailed in?
No, I mean, if it's in the sense of an emergency, like I said, the riots, then, you got to do it to protect people. Cause that's what it comes down to. Like when you have negative rights, the way that our stuff is set up, it's not necessarily saying you as the individual, what you're not allowed to do. It's what the government can do regulations as it affects to you. Like I can swing my arms around, right, all day. As long as I don't come in contact with you, I have freedom of movement, right?
Right.
And freedom of movement ends when I start slapping you in the face and then you would have a problem with that, right? Same thing with words, where if I say something you don't like, you know what your freedom is? You can go somewhere else and not have to hear me. Well, some I can't tie you down and make you listen to me.
Well, some people would say that just like, getting hit with fists, words are similar. Right. You hear you safe spaces and stuff on college campuses. You know, it's the same way. It's verbally assaulting. And they attach those same things that we would do physical assault. But words are different than physically assaulting someone, than you reaching across the table and slapping me. I can say something you don't like. And we have this beautiful thing that we can just go, okay,
goodbye.
Exactly. And so in that sense, you're not saying to regulate speech in that sense. You're saying
you can say whatever
you're saying. The other person has the freedom to choose what they want.
They have the same freedoms you do. So I have the freedom then to say goodbye and leave you alone. And you have no obligation to anybody else, to do more than that. So
you talk about obligation, right? So does the press have obligations, since we're in this First Amendment? Do they have an obligation to be objective, or do they just have an obligation to the bottom dollar?
I honestly think that if we just made it so that it was truthful, you could pursue whatever. I mean, we watched tabloids in the supermarket print trash forever. They made money doing it. Everybody who read it knew it was there. I've seen people go to wrestling matches, and then everybody knows it's not fake. But as long as they're honest about what it is that they're doing. Now, if they're dishonest, then there's laws protecting me from saying, here, buy this car right? And you buy the car and find out it's a Matchbox car. That I sold you something different than what you thought you were buying.
Right, right. No, that makes sense. Do you see, what do you see in culture right now and in our world that is unhealthy when it comes to free speech and freedom of the press? What are the things that, if Joe could wave a magic wand, what would be the things that he would change?
We fought so hard for tolerances, and all we did was create so many intolerances. I mean, nobody can see or hear things they don't like without, you know, burning cities down here. And that's what if I could make everybody have thicker skin, hear it, and not respond to it, that's what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is true. You know, so much of, what's happened in our world is, people not being able to be adults. I mean, I thought the idea of mature was, I can hear what you say, but, and I can defend your right to say it. I don't have to listen to it. I don't have to agree with it. I don't even have to like what you say. But you certainly should be able to say it. And we're in this spot right now, whether it's on, the race issue, whether, you know, for a while it was on marriage equality and all of that. We got into a spot where it's very interesting. One side was fighting for certain freedoms, and then they got those freedoms, and then they turned around and used that weapon against the other side and said, well, you kept this from us from so long, so now not only do you have to let us have it, but you have to embrace this. And there's such a difference, I think, between tolerance and approval, and we've moved to that space where I tolerate anything. I don't have to approve of everything.
Yeah, and if you, even if you disagree with how people are going about it, where they're trying to figure out whether or not they can get an advantage using that kind of strategy that you talked about, it's not affecting me at all, and I'm watching it happen, and nobody's asking my opinion about it, right? Yeah. So that's why you haven't heard me share much about it, because they haven't engaged me about it.
Yeah. Well, knowing your bent to be a little bit more libertarian in your approach to life and politics, like, hey, it's not bothering me, I'm just going to keep you know, trugging along. I think I know, at least for me, and I think for a lot of people out there, there is this, I think there's a window here, an opportunity window for some organizations to step up and try and challenge some of these tech giants that are tipping their hand to, as to how they're going to do business. And if you don't like that, great, do that. But does it make us... does it make us weak and splintered? And here's what I mean. So Twitter and Facebook are facing constant allegations that they are a propaganda machine for the left, and they lean that way, and they throttle down conservative organizations, and et cetera, et cetera. Does it, I hear what you're saying. Well, just start a free market one, but what's going to happen is you're going to pull all the conservatives out of one group and put them in another group, and then you're just going to have two splintered.
But it depends if your goal is to control the mainstream or just prosper in whatever group that you're in. Mm. Like, can you deal with 99% of the country having, like, be totally confused and frustrated about how things are going, but because you stand back and figure it out, they kind of leave you alone and you do your own thing. Mm. Right. So now if you want to affect the mainstream, that's a much harder thing, because that's controlling culture. Yeah. And I don't know anybody that, you know, has that kind of persuasion at this point. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see more fragmentation in our culture, where we're going to be big groups that are more separated until we're not. I don't think you can do that forever. And I think you'll meld back in after you see the disadvantage. It's almost like if California said, we're not going to be a part of this, and they go off and do their own thing, and they're like, hey, this really sucks not being part of the United States. And eventually maybe you meld back in knowing what you just gave up by.
I think Texas tried to do that once.
Yeah.
The Republic of Texas. Yeah. Way back when. Yeah. No, I certainly hear, and that's a little more free flowing. I'm not sure. I don't know. I think, culturally at large, I do agree. I think we're going to end up more fragmented, and you're going to end up with a conservative Facebook and a conservative Twitter and a and those sort of things.
But it won't take long. It'll only be in that spot for a little while, because, I mean, once you're in the thick of what sucks, you're going to figure out that you liked what didn't suck a little better.
Hmm. And then it puts you in echo chambers, which is always the issue, is then you're only getting a certain set of information that you want, that you like, that reaffirms your worldview and belief system. And a lot of times that puts you in a spot where you're never challenged. And I guess that's my tension in that. Like, you don't want to run out of these systems that maybe you find to be unfair. You don't like the way they're doing certain things because of your, but if you leave that sphere, it was a great example. So, people all my life, ask my parents, well, why didn't you send your kids to Christian school? Right. You guys are Christians. You go to church. They could get, they could have a Bible class. They could have all this stuff. And my parents' answer was always the same. I don't want to pull them out of the public school system, not because it's the greatest educator in the world, not because of all this sort of stuff, but we want our kids to be able to stand on their own two feet, and they're going to face ideas there, and they're going to face teachers there. Amen. And they're going to face
really good,
all that stuff brilliant in that space that's going to challenge some of the stuff that I'm teaching them at home. But if I just put them in this bubble, one day that bubble's going to burst, and they're going to look around and they're not going to be able to make an argument for themselves as to why they believe what they
that
believe.
That right there is what our forefathers did. It's just,
exactly.
You're going to have the freedom. Here's the responsibility. Deal with it.
Yeah. And I think that is the tension for people that are feeling slighted with Facebook and Twitter and the news and any of that sort of stuff. It's like, you can run from it and you can certainly see an opportunity and create your own space. But by doing that, you're pulling your influence out of there. You're going to end up in an echo chamber that you only hear one side. And I think our world will suffer if people pull out like that, if that makes sense. I don't think that's the healthiest approach. Like, I would rather stay in and fight than pull out and just create my own.
Well, but if you did that, if you even see some of the commentators that are on both sides, that that people on one side will complain about the other guys. You know what that means? They're like watching the other guy because they want to see what that other person is saying. So even if you pull out, you're not really pulling out. You might be having a competing thing over here, but you're still paying attention to what's going on over there. And that's why the Texas or California would meld back in with the United States, because they would not be able to stop comparing their progress versus what they just left. Everybody does that, right?
Okay. So you don't ever foresee, I mean, since you brought it up, you don't ever foresee an instance where a state or somebody like that secedes from the union? And
yeah, I think it'll always happen. I think the threat of that will always happen, as long as you have 50 competing and somebody feels slighted, somebody's getting more money, somebody's getting more attention, somebody's going to feel like they need to not be there until they figure out that it sucks not to be there.
It's interesting. There was a group of libertarians that all decided, they picked a location. I think it was in New Hampshire or Vermont or something. They picked a location and they just started inviting people there. It was called like the Free State Project or something like that. It was a few years ago. And they were like, if we get enough people here, we can vote in the policies that we want, and we can, basically create a free little culture within the culture.
And it really sounds like Animal Farm coming together, right? Yeah.
It's a really fascinating idea. I was like, but I've seen enough cult movies to be like, don't drink the Kool-Aid,
Well, and as a kid, when I read Animal Farm, like that really hit me, because I saw that happening in the real world in small microcosms of that deal. So once you know the tendency of human beings, whether or not they're in small groups or big groups, they always do the same thing.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we are creatures of
South Park even made fun of it, where they had a bunch of those people that were they had the black hair, and what are those people called? Emos, right?
Oh yeah.
And so the group of kids where they all got together to be different than everybody, and then they could play like, let's be like each other in our little group,
No, that's so true. And you see that, I think, across the board, across cultures. Like attracts like. I mean, we say that all the time when it comes to various stuff. And so it's the natural progression for these cultures and these groups to sync up and link up and to share values and to be together. And it's interesting to me. We talk about, and we're really going to go on a tangent here. We talk about an American culture as a melting pot. It's all this sort of stuff coming in it. But the culture in New Jersey and the culture in Ohio, night and day. I mean, I've lived in both states for substantial amounts of time. Obviously, I was raised in New Jersey, but living here, I mean, two different worlds.
Yeah.
Two different approaches, two different the way I'll use this illustration with guns. Okay. Never shot a gun until I came to Ohio. Mine held a gun once, if I'm thinking maybe, and it wasn't loaded and it was like, 100 years old. It was like an antique. Come to Ohio, I'm not here 3 days. People are like, want to go to the range, blow some crap up? I was like, sure. And went and shot guns. But then as I was around this culture, where it wasn't just like one crazy guy had some guns, or in New Jersey, it's very difficult to get firearms. And the only people that had them came from other states usually and used them for hunting. And it was, oh, I'm a sports shooter, I'm whatever. And it was always attached to those things. But the vast majority of people didn't have them. And I remember this conversation. So I came out here, I bought my first firearm, I went to the range, all that stuff, and then I went to the CCW class, wanted to learn how to handle the weapon right, went on the range, got some instructional time, and got my concealed carry. And I was back in New Jersey visiting a family, and I said it to one of my family members. I was like, oh, you know, I showed them, I was like, you know, I got a concealed weapons permit. And they were like, well, who do you want to hurt? Like the concept, and that conversation was repeated 3 or 4 times while I was there in New Jersey. And it was the culture was very different because it was an offensive weapon. Like, why do you need that to hurt somebody? And I'm like, it's a tool to defend I pray I never have to use it. But if somebody does come, I know exactly how to use it. If somebody tried to hurt my family, I know exactly how to use it. And I pray I never have to use it, but it's a defensive weapon. But the language was totally different. And it was so startling to me. It was very offensive in that culture. So we talk about this American culture. We want everyone to be in this utopia of America.
And I disagree with that.
And the truth is, our culture is very tribal.
Yeah.
Northeast Ohio is different from Southeast Ohio. I mean, right. You're just different from Columbus, from Cleveland. Well,
it's different. And again, we have like defenses and comfort when you have, you know, homogenous everything. We all feel the same and believe the same, because what happens if you have something that are different, it causes friction. But physics needs movement, right? It needs energy. Yeah. And the only way you get energy is you have to have things that are polar opposites. The bigger swings, the more energy, the more things change. So a person like me, if I want to see a bunch of change, I need California and, you know, Oklahoma to be so starkly different that they're willing to do stuff instead of sit around and watch themselves die.
Interesting. So you think the goal is not the American culture utopia where everybody says the same thing, believes the same thing. So what do we have if we don't have that?
What do we have? Well,
in the sense that we don't have a shared set of values.
Exactly.
And that's just going to continue to lead to fracture.
When I first got into business, you know what I saw? A bunch of businesses that were solid. And you know what 99% of what they did was to keep new people from coming into their deals. That means if I'm coming in new, I'm shut out. I can't do anything. Wow. So the only thing I need a market correction every 10 years to shake things up, to give the new guy a chance to defend against the people who are there. Because that's really what happens in our culture, is that people will defend their positions and nobody else will be able to have anything because of those people and how well defended they would be.
All right, I'm going to ask this question because
we
have like 6 minutes and the election's on Tuesday. So was Donald Trump that market correction?
Heck yeah.
I mean, basically, he shocked all the polls. I remember a week or two out from the election, you know, New York Times, a couple people put up an article, 92% chance Hillary Clinton's going to win, 8% chance Donald Trump's going to win. And you had all these people that had never voted before. You had all these people, the silent majority and stuff like that, that came out and were like, screw this. Like, yeah, the guy's a little brash and the guy says some things I don't agree with and he tweets too much and everything else. But these guys have just been lying in their pockets and are total scumbags. And, you know, and if the Clintons don't epitomize political scum, I don't know who does.
Right. So those politicians, right, the big companies that...
And the whole drain the swamp and all that sort of stuff. So you're saying in the same way we had a market correction in business, he was kind of the market correction for politics at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we were all aware of it. We always said, oh, politicians are all corrupt.
Right.
But then we just tolerated the corruptions from happening and let them keep doing it.
Yeah, and part of it was, it didn't affect my life that much. It wasn't that big a deal. And then stuff started to continue to go up and down and up and down. And then someone like Trump comes along and he just starts talking about the elephant in the room that everybody's ignoring.
So if you love your freedom of this country so bad, would you let your country be destroyed down to its minimal parts so it can be built again? Like if you would allow somebody to come in and take all the institutions that are compromised, bring them back to their on paper doctrine definitions, and then redo it? Because that's built into the documents, man.
Yeah,
it goes south, it's our job and obligation as citizens to rebuild it the way that it should have been.
I think it was Jefferson or one of them said that, you know, every once in a while, you know, freedom has to be, the ground of freedom has to be
because
watered with the blood of patriots.
Defend their positions of making tons of money for not having to do much, controlling people and having ultimate power. You get tyranny and despots, and then we clear the decks and bring back to the original freedoms again.
Hmm.
How did we get here, man?
I don't know. We started with free speech. Well, it's the first one. It's the most important one. Regardless of how people feel about free speech and the kind of state of our country, I hope that if you haven't voted early, that you'll go out and vote on Tuesday. I often say to people, too many people have bled and died for your right to be able to do that. And up until thus far, that freedom is still yours, so take advantage of it and go out and vote on Tuesday or go early.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.